You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show. I'm Robert Lee. I'm alongside Kit Alexander, an esteemed journalist in his own mind, and Rhys Davies, who's flown in from the West Country. Actually, west of the West Country, from Wales, Rhys. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Rob. How are you?
Yeah, good. Kit?
I'm excellent. Do you feel a bit outnumbered? Two kind of West Country...
Two bumpkins. The straw hats are doing it for me, but, you know, I'll live with it. It's fine.
It's only because that's all we're wearing.
Yeah, but let's talk about Lee Westwood. What a win. What a win for a player that, in his mid-40s, Rhys, is just playing as good as he ever has done.
Yeah, his golf on the weekend was outstanding. It was arguably completely faultless. Every time he had an iron shot, it looked like he was going straight at his target. And most impressively for me was his scrambling abilities. He actually had a few tough par putts to hole on Sunday and was up to the challenge every time.
How much fun is that golf course coming down the stretch?
Oh, it's fantastic. Because you know there's opportunities going on. There can be mistakes made. It does get tricky. But also, you can make plenty of birdies. You just saw from the leaders' scorecard, certainly, especially on that front nine. No one bogeyed it, basically, in the front sort of five, six guys. And Westwood was just unbelievable. The one word that sprung to mind for me watching it was control. Control of his own game. Everything looked in check, which, considering he said he'd barely practiced or swung a golf club and had very low expectations going in there, was incredible. And control of the tournament. He never let anyone really put any obscene pressure on him. Whenever he needed to make a save or pull up a shot or just add another birdie just to cushion it, it was there. It was all easy for him, it seemed. I very rarely can remember seeing such a good front-running performance as that from Westy.
We're going to talk Lee Westwood. We're going to look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. And we'll talk about Søren Kjeldsen. 600 events on the European Tour.
Yeah, it sounds like a cricket score, doesn't it? And a very good one. Highly impressive. And not stopping either. He wants to keep going.
Okay, back to Westwood, the final round. HSBC Abu Dhabi leading going into round four. How confident were you that he was going to close this out?
It's funny, for a guy that has won the number of times he has, obviously 24 on the European Tour prior to that, over 40 globally, just because the thing that has always let him down has been the putting and the holing out a little bit in the short game over the years, that's the thing that you tend to see comes under pressure. And there was a great cast of guys pushing him as well. So you never felt like it was a done deal ahead of the final round. Once you were seeing him perform on the course, it almost felt like a done deal from sort of the middle of the front nine, really.
Well, you mentioned front running, and Rhys, the start when you're leading going into the final day is so, so important. And he made very quick work of that front nine, 4 under par, and looked like it was easy, cruising.
Yeah, absolutely. But others did as well. So although...
He had to keep going, of course.
No question. I personally felt Fitzpatrick was going to come through at the start of the day. I thought he was the one. His form over the last 12 months or so has been exceptional without having that win. So it only just feels like he's going to win another tournament very soon. So I personally thought he was going to come through. And his golf suggested that he just about nearly did enough, obviously. But no, Westwood's golf, you know, outstanding.
You know, sometimes you hit a shot somewhere and it defines your week. And I'm going to say the shot that defined... Well, there's another one, but the one that really got him going was his approach wood shot to the eighth hole on the third round. Mm-hmm. Remember watching that?
It was four or five feet. Shot of the day, yeah.
To drive it on the fairway like he did, played most of his golf on the fairway and hit a lofted fairway wood into... I don't know, probably 260 yards to about 4 feet and hole the putt for an eagle. That, for me, was the point where now it's game on for him.
It obviously gave him the confidence. He talked a lot about what he's sort of working on in swing and what he's trying to do on each individual shot. And I think that would have given him utmost confidence in what he has been working on is obviously proving to come through and to do what he's trying to do.
That's obviously the difficult thing. You're working on something on the range. He's working hard with Robert Rock. It's obviously working, but taking that to the golf course and then taking that to the final Sunday when you're in contention to win a tournament as well, sticking with it, not falling back on the old habits and something that might be bad. And a couple of times on that back nine, he did say the bad shot with what he's working on is he just pulls it a little bit. He did it a couple of times, but he scrambled well, as you said, Rhys, and got away with it. He did it in the right places.
He knew it was going left, though, and immediately that takes out half the golf course. It's actually quite it's not saying it's easy to play, but it's...
It's not the double miss, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. If it's either going straight at the flag or a bit left, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
when it could go, well, as we all know, right, left, rarely straight, then you're real, you know, you're questioning everything.
Westwood's been incredible because, you know, his... You look at him, I mean, all right, he's maybe not quite got the flexibility maybe he had 15 years ago, but you expect that as you get into your mid-40s. But the swing shape, the swing when you look at it. Now, off the top of my head, he's was a Pete Cowan guy, and he certainly worked with Ledbetter. Now he's working with Robert Rock, and I don't know if there's anyone else that had a bit of a go in between. He's come through all those coaches essentially unchanged. That's a very rare thing in golf because you go to a coach, your swing changes, and you can never go back. That's what happens. You think, if it doesn't work, I'll go back. It doesn't. You can never go back. And Westwood has kept that swing shape and essentially is, even though he's had coaching, he's changed nothing.
Well, there's a couple of...
That's almost impossible.
A couple of idiosyncrasies in his swing. The one that is kind of most obvious is that slightly bent left arm sure. through impact, which, like you say, you go to the wrong coach and if he says, right, I want to get you picture perfect, we want to be technically neutral, they might try and coach that out of him. But that is part of his natural swing. That's part of his natural makeup. And they and he have worked around that. And as well as that, the longevity, a lot of credit has to go to the physical side of it as well. There's been periods in his career where he's been a bit overweight earlier on. Then he got very lean, very fit.
Went a bit extreme the other way, didn't he?
With Steve McGregor, who's also worked with Rory McIlroy. So he invested a lot of time and effort.
And buying medium T-shirts.
Yeah, and buying... He's had to completely change his wardrobe about 15 times over the year just for the sizes. But that all builds into the longevity as well, the fitness and the injury prevention.
He looks comfortable in his own skin.
The lower half of his body doesn't seem to change to me. That seems very solid. Throughout the years, yes, he may have changed slight technical differences in the backswing or in the dash.
Nuances,
exactly. But the lower half stays more or less the same throughout the years, which always assures a certain strike or can help assure a certain strike on the ball, and that brings the control. And that's been his strength throughout his career, is his driving and his iron play.
Where did I talk to Lee fairly recently? I think it might have been Turkey, actually, the last few tournaments on the European Tour 2019. And we had on Sky Sports, we had an overlay. We had Lee Westwood from maybe 10 years ago, split screen, and Lee Westwood now, both swings starting at the same time. Now, apart from a little bit of maybe slightly bigger shoulder turn from being a younger man, the positions and the sequence and the timing of the swing hadn't changed one iota. It was extraordinary. I told him, I was on the range, and I said, Lee, look, we did a thing. It's incredible watching you now. I watched you when you were a kid and you just came out. You don't look any different. It's true. You're not any different. Because go and have a look at that. He said, I'm going to have a look at that. So I'm really interested to see that.
He owns his swing.
It is truly
his. And I think that's a key thing, especially for a lot of young kids as well. You have to own your swing and it has to be part of your DNA. Now, of course, you can improve on that and coaches will be able to identify things you can do differently. But don't ever get too far away from what is your natural rhythm. Some people tend to be quicker, some people are slower. Go with it. Whatever your natural feeling is, your shot shape, I think it's so important to feel like it's your swing, you own it and you have control over it, and you're just not enacting something that a coach tells you to do.
See, also, Reese, you could work it this way and say, well, if you are Lee Westwood and you do hit it Lee Westwood, why would you change?
Well,
most people don't hit it like he does, and that's why they do change. I've got to find something else.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He obviously had a lot of success early in his career, so immediately he was assured that what he was doing was working. So why would you change it drastically? It's if certain elements of your game are not up to standard of tour, then you have to maybe think about doing something about it one way or another. But if you can, you have success early. Yes, you want to improve, but he had success. His long game was obviously far superior to others at a similar standard, and so he could keep doing what he's doing.
How good, by the way, was his putting?
Incredible. And the change of grip, yep. So the claw grip. We see a lot of the top guys doing it. Justin Rose does it. Tommy Fleetwood does it. I've actually started doing it as well in the last 6 months, 8 months. John Morgan showed me.
And you're still horrific.
But better, not as horrific.
Okay,
well,
good.
I've not played a lot because of injury, so I'm hoping I'm going to be a world beater when I come back watching all this world-class golf. But it's interesting that sometimes that change, whatever it may be, can completely turn someone's fortunes. And you were watching him thinking, he's going to hold this from 6 foot. When have you ever watched Lee Westwood with the greatest respect and everything he's achieved? You were never that confident when he was over sort of a 4 or 6 foot of a par necessarily.
I mean, before your time, Kit, and maybe a little bit before Reese's time, Westy, when he was young, you know, before he was 30, he won, I can't remember how many tournaments he won, but every time he got a sniff, he closed it out. Mm. He was just one of the best winners that our tour has ever seen. Mm. I mean, then it slowed down and he got a bit woolly, but you know, two Rolex series events now in a little over a year, it's been phenomenal for him. I'm going to put something to you. They always talk about Westy. They used to talk about Monty, but he's a senior now. It doesn't matter. And Monty, senior majors don't count, okay? They don't count. Lee Westwood to win a major this year. I'm just throwing it out there.
Do you know what? It's not that crazy a shout, in all honesty. He's got the experience. He's actually got a very good record at Augusta through the years.
He's played well at Augusta, yes, he has.
Obviously, the Open, he's done pretty well, and he knows how to negotiate his way around a links course. Perhaps US Open and US PGA, the setup might not suit him as much, but you know, Tiger came back and won when everyone had written him off at Augusta. Okay, slightly different beast, but we all know how experience can make a huge difference there. I mean,
you leapt on that, but I saw Reese's face there as I posed there, and he kind of, there was a bit of gurning going on.
Yeah, a little bit. I feel Augusta's a bit of a stretch, length as much as anything. As great a control as the ball he has, he's not in the bombers category anymore, or he's not up with the real big boys. I think certainly a ball striking control golf course, he could certainly feature, you know, a good draw at the Open at St. George's.
Listen,
that's not out of the question.
He hits
at all.
It far enough to win a major championship. So the question is, can he win one?
I mean, he's
averaged
around 300 yards.
No doubt.
Last week, he was around 300
Mate,
yards.
He's always been a really, really, you know, top three quarters hitter. That's where he's been. He's not the Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy stage, but in the sort of group underneath, he's in there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He's always been a really good hitter.
I agree. I know what you're saying. I just think that he's just not in that real top bracket of length, which can make a difference at Augusta. I think some of the other venues, the US Open or an Open Championship, not so much as a...
So you've gone venues, but you haven't answered my question.
All right.
My question is, Lee Westwood for a major this year, what do you think?
Probably not. I'd love it, and it could happen, but...
Do you know, I've just got...
I'm struggling as well.
I've got such a strong feeling about this.
Honestly, could get some good odds. I mean, you could make a bit of dollar on that.
You know, you watch the way he played, the way he absolutely choked that field down yesterday, and the shot he hit into 18, all right, it's a par 5, and he's got a one-shot advantage, but the second shot he hit into that middle of that par 5 green was just a glorious shot.
Oh, yeah.
As good as anyone can hit.
That was noticeable. You pointed it out. His fairway wood play into the par 5s was outstanding. No question.
And if you play like that, you can win a major championship. And if you putt like that, you can win a major championship. One, you know, I talked about the shot, maybe the one that got him into amongst the leaders and gave him a real bump in his round on the Saturday. But on the Sunday, what about the iron shot to the 12th, the par 3?
Ooh, that was,
which yeah, was
that,
hanging
that
on was, by I mean, an inch. And he turned that into a 2.
And then it goes in. It's a 4 or a 2, isn't it? Maybe even a 5 if he doesn't quite get the pitch
five.
Right. You know, yeah. Mm. So, but those are the margins.
They are margins. Very fine.
No one's ever won a golf tournament with bad luck. And you need a little bit of luck along the way, but you earn it, and he earned it there. And again, looking ahead and, can he win a major? Again, it'll probably come down to a little bit of luck. If he's in contention, does he get the bounce of a ball? Does someone else do something spectacular or something silly? He's certainly in the conversation, you would say now, but so are 30 or 40 guys now going into every major.
Sure, but I think there's a bit of confidence building there. I mean, listen, he's had a great career. He doesn't want for money and everything else, but there's definitely a little bit of confidence there brewing with Lee Westwood. Definitely.
What's more likely?
Because don't forget, the way he won the Nedbank just over a year ago was much in the same vein.
It was, yeah.
He was phenomenal coming down that stretch, going for it, as opposed to you know, playing away from trouble. He committed, full commit all the way in. It was so brilliant the way he won it, and he repeated that yesterday.
The major might be an outside shout, but an 11th Ryder Cup appearance might not be such an outside. I mean, he's inside the qualification now, albeit with a long way to go.
He's got a great chance.
All the experience, even if he doesn't qualify automatically, if he only just misses out, you'd be hard-pushed not to give him a pick with all of his experience if he continues the form through the year.
What about winning an event in four different decades?
Oh, historical.
Yeah, impressive. Yeah.
I mean, that's insane.
Has he created, has he given Padraig Harrington...
is this a question?
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. Has Westwood given Padraig Harrington a good opening for him? Is this a good thing that has happened, or has it given him a headache that he perhaps wasn't expecting and therefore doesn't need?
Well, you know, sometimes, like Sergio's done, he's missed out on Ryder Cups, gone to a Ryder Cup as a vice-captain and kind of got reinvigorated, and that might happen to Westwood, yeah. having to go and watch the lads and then thinking, do you know what? I know it is, it's a mind bomb for these players playing a Ryder Cup. You want to play it so much, but also it's just draining. The whole week is really draining, but that experience can't be replicated anywhere else. And I've got to think that Lee Westwood, watching the lads, what happened in France, being amongst the team, thinking, yeah. do you know what? I could still be here. I think that's playing quite heavily on his mind. I think he wants to be in the team.
He can be there anyway, though. We know that, whether it's with golf clubs or not. Mm-hmm. And that could be...
He's going to be a captain at some point.
Yes, yeah. You'd have to think that.
No doubt about it. Lee Westwood's going to be a Ryder Cup captain at some point.
Yeah, we would not disagree with that at all.
No, phenomenal. Phenomenal week for Lee Westwood. Before we hear from him, we should probably talk about the world number one coming out of retirement this week. and 66 in the first round from Brooks probably surprised everybody.
It definitely surprised me. I think what he did the rest of the week was more kind of in keeping
rust,
with what you'd expect.
Yeah,
a little bit of rust. I think generally he can be relatively pleased. He's got four rounds under his belt, one of them very good, looked excellent in parts. Of course, there are a few silly moments in there with that rust, but he's got that out of the way. And as we know, Brooks is all about the big events, the majors. This is just part of the plan for him of getting ready for Augusta, essentially.
And we haven't talked about one of the finest young players who was trying to do something special as he just turned 29, Tommy Fleetwood. It was a brilliant last round, 63. Couldn't quite squeeze any more out of it, but horses for courses layout. With two wins in the last 3 years there, it should have been no surprise that he would have played well this week.
No, not at all. I wasn't surprised. I don't think many of us were surprised to see him shoot a score like that. Signs are good with Tommy. He's obviously very content with what he's doing. Yeah, his game is, his swing looks as good as ever. Yeah, he
looks great, doesn't he?
He's more, to me, he's more likely as a possible major shout this
Absolutely.
Summer, this coming year.
It's more likely than what?
Than Westwood, I think.
Just to clarify. Because people will be on at Twitter, on us, you know, they want to know, are you actually saying? You're saying Fleetwood's more likely than Westwood to win a major.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, that's probably fair.
Yeah. I think it's worthy of note. Look at his final round scoring average over the last 6 months or so as well. He's like shooting 63 to 68 in every final round.
He's actually a bit of a younger Westwood. If he can rack up more wins, because when Westwood got on the winning trail, when he found out what it was, what he had to do, he did it so many times. That's really what Tommy has to do. But I love watching Tommy Fleetwood, beautiful player, as I love watching Lee Westwood, have done for over the years. Let's hear from the man himself. Here's Lee Westwood after his win in Abu Dhabi.
Fantastic, really, you know, ecstatic, elated, a bit emotional. You know, just great to keep playing well, really, and, you know, that's still good enough.
Tommy Fleetwood was climbing through the field. I'm sure you saw him at some point on the leaderboard, really trying to celebrate his birthday today. How much were you trying to keep him in check there?
I was trying not to look at the leaderboards. I peeked at a few on the way around the back nine, and I could see that Victor had shot 9 under and Tommy had shot 9 under and finished 17. So Fitz didn't look like getting any better than 17, so I knew I had to, you know, just try and par in when I was 19 under. So, you know, I just tried to do that. I bogeyed 16, but it was a nice, solid birdie at the last. Two good shots at 17 as well, so some quality golf.
This marks your 21st European Tour win, and you join a very elite group of players who have won over four decades. So I don't mean to make you feel old, but it's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it is. It's a long time when you say it. So, you know, I won my first tournament in 1996 in Sweden, and I've won that tournament, Scandinavian Masters, in three different decades, and now obviously one here this week. So, you know, could be the 20s, could be the ones for me.
We know you had a good break in Thailand before, but we also know you've been working hard at the drive, also working hard at the putting. Which area of your game are you happy with this week?
I was happy with all of it. You know, I've been working hard in the gym. I've had some good time off. I've relaxed, you know, settled my mind, and, you know, rested. That space between the ears. Been driving the ball well. Ping set me up a new driver in Dubai at the end of last year and got used to that, and I've driven the ball fantastically well. So everything was good. Iron shots were good, but putting was was very good this week, so long may that continue, because I think when I start rolling a few putts in, I'm competitive, you know, most weeks.
You're going to get a chance to celebrate later?
I'm on dry January. I promised myself when I came back from Thailand I wouldn't have a drink till after Saudi, so be on the sparkling water.
Well, I've got news on that front, because even though it was supposed to be a dry January, he had a change of heart after the victory, and he tweeted today, "You'll all be happy to know I've got a banging headache." And he put a picture of himself, and he looked like he was a little bit frayed on the edges, Reese.
Yeah.
Good on him.
Good on him. Who can blame him? I mean, I don't think, dry January only usually lasts a few days anyway for most people, doesn't it?
And you can notice that he said he was going to end dry January in Saudi, which is kind of, it's a dry place anyway. He wasn't giving up too much there. Interesting point he made, though, about his putting. If he feels like he's putting well, he'll back himself.
Well, of course, he knows the rest of his game is still world class, and that's always been the case for him. If Lee Westwood has even an average week on the greens, his ball striking to get there means he's going to be in contention. So, obviously, the confidence is flowing. And like you say, you fancy him to challenge you to big events, obviously, this year.
I've just got a feeling about Lee Westwood, you know, the guy that never won a major, that was always up there for his entire career, one of the best players in the world. And just for some reason, it's difficult to win one of only four events that are named every year. It's difficult to do. I don't know. I've just got a feeling.
Think he could do a Darren Clark when you think his best years are behind him. Suddenly,
you know,
that's a very good
case in point. Clark had Darren had a great career, and all of a sudden comes up trumps at the Open and wins. And things had to happen for him to win with, you know, the shank out of bounds for Dustin Johnson on the par five coming down the stretch. It all went Darren's way, and it could happen for Lee Westwood.
That could be arguably sporting story of the year, never mind golfing story of the year. So that brings with it even more pressure, because
the Lee Westwood,
the potential of Lee Westwood winning a major, that's serious headlines, wouldn't you agree? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm not just talking within the golfing world, I'm talking within the sporting world.
People were, I've got several ridiculous WhatsApp groups, of which I could never divulge what comes out on it, but they're all golfers, all the separate groups are golfers. And I was getting texts yesterday, you know, I tell you what, I hope Lee wins, I really want Lee to win. Very popular.
Oh yeah,
people like Lee Westwood to do well.
Yeah, he's been a great. He's been very much a big loyalist with the European Tour.
Yeah.
He's played around the world, but he's played. He's played in tournaments that we as European golf fans want to see him playing in, and I think as a result, he has a great fan base.
23 years, 5 months, and 16 days after his maiden victory in the 1996 Volvo Scandinavia Masters, and I think, from memory, I'm sure that he played off against Russell Claydon and holed a long putt from the front of a green to win.
I was barely out of nappies, so...
And a lot of people say, Kit, you're still in them. Yeah,
for different reasons.
I was there. I remember watching him win that. I'm pretty sure it was Russell Claydon and Lee Westwood. Anyway, memories from, 23 years ago. That's incredible.
96.
And he is the eighth man now to win multiple Rolex Series events. And two in, like I say, just over 12 months. That's pretty nice for your bank balance.
I was just thinking he's keeping the bank manager happy getting towards his later years for sure.
Reese, give me the top 10 then in the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship.
In reverse, in tied eighth position, we have Bernd Wiesberger, Sergio Garcia, Scott Jameson with a great final round, and Martin Kaymer on his favoured golf course.
See, the horses for courses thing, it plays out again with Martin.
It does. Tied sixth position, Ross Fisher, good weekend, and Sean Norris, who started so well. Fifth, Louis Oosthuizen, always seems to be up there. Tied second, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, Victor Perez, the other man to shoot 63 on Sunday.
Yeah.
And, of course, our winner, Lee Westwood.
Now, predictions-wise, you, Murray, Matt Cooper and myself had a go. Just to remind you of the rules, it's 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for top 20, 0 if you make the cut. But if you miss the cut, you lose 5 points. So Ewan went for Patrick Cantlay and Brandon Stone. Both men made the cut, but didn't score high enough to score any points. So he was 0 points. Matt, in your absence, Kit went for Victor Hovland, who missed the cut, and Sean Norris, who finished sixth, though, minus five and 5 points. That's zero. He was carbon neutral. And I went for Tommy Fleetwood, who finished second, and Thomas Peters, who finished 30th. So actually, the presenters made some headway. So the overall score is 20 points for me and whoever's in this seat. Co-presenters, 10 points. And guests, Kit, are on 40 points so far.
Delighted to hear that.
You've been impressive. You and the like have been impressive. There's no doubt. We'll make some predictions later on the show for the game, for the week that's coming up, rather, on the European Tour as they go just down the road. It's only about 45 minutes down the road to the Emirates from Abu Dhabi. Now, you can make your own predictions each week by heading to europeantour.com to register for the Fantasy Race to Dubai game. The 2020 fantasy season will launch very soon. So are you sort of checking out? Are you thinking you might like to back and...
Chomping at the bit for that. I play it every year. I absolutely love it.
Now, the dodos behind the glass here that we have to deal with week in, week out, normally have our own little private league, which we invite all of you, our listeners, to join in. And so apparently now we've just had the word we're going to start one, which is good because last year they were slack, very slack. But new management this year. So we're going to have our own private league in amongst the main game that's worldwide. So if you're a listener to the podcast, we'd love to have your company when it comes online, and that's just around the corner. Now, I should mention that it's quite apt, really, with Westwood winning so well. I know he putted well, but he drives the ball unbelievably well. And on the European Tour website, they're doing a thing. It's a challenge. They went back four decades with Callaway clubs from four different 10-year patches, and they got two players to get out there and see how they could... By the way, when you go back and hit clubs from 20 or 30 years ago, how easy or difficult is it?
They look very small. They are very small. It's it's amazing how things have evolved. No question. It's, harder.
Eric Van Rooyen, Matt Wallace, they did the gig with appropriate clothing, Kit. They probably made a visit to your wardrobe, perhaps, get some sort of 80s gear out and sort of stuff like that and look pretty cool.
The gear when I was in the 80s is a bit smaller, though. You know, like toddler size.
Oh, was it toddler size?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, Matt Wallace could squeeze into that. That little green sort of
he could do that.
Thing he had on didn't look like it was overly large.
Was Eric wearing socks, was he? That's an unusual thing for him, isn't it?
He's normally the bare ankle, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's
man of bare ankle.
Yeah.
He must have been getting a right sweat on down there at the bottom of his leg.
I suppose so, yeah. Well, the pin was 333 yards away. You can find out how close they got. Europeantour.com, you'll see the challenge. Four drivers from four different decades by two really good ball strikers. That's a bit of fun. Okay, let's remind you of the Race to Dubai top 10, Rhys.
Here we are in reverse order. In 10th position, Joel Sholham. In 9th, Adam Scott. 8th position, Rasmus Højgaard, who won in Mauritius so well at the end of last calendar year. In 7th was Pablo Larrazabal, also a winner on tour this season. In 6th position, Louis Oosthuizen. And we got three in the tied third spot. Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, and Victor Perez all finished second this week. Brandon Grace, winner last week in South Africa, in second. And of course, Lee Westwood, top of the tree.
Very good. So we talked about Lee Westwood winning in four different decades. But what about a man who's played 600 events on the European Tour, Søren Kjeldsen, and I'm very pleased to say that he's on the line right now. Søren, 600 events. On the European Tour. And you still sound as fresh as the first day you came out.
Yeah, but I still feel like that, Robert. It's amazing. 600. I think it's gone quite fast, but obviously 600 is a big number.
How have you kept your enthusiasm going? Has it been easy to do or difficult to do?
It's been super easy. I haven't had one day where I didn't want to go practice or play. It's I have no idea where that comes from, but I just... The game excites me, the competition, you know, all the people, everything is just, I think it's a wonderful place to be.
Hey, Søren, it's Rhys Davies here. Many congratulations.
Thanks, Rhys. Thanks so much.
No problem. Do you remember what you wanted to achieve when you first started? And do you feel like you've achieved those goals?
I think, when I started, to be on tour was huge. And, I think every kid that plays golf, sort of seriously wants to win the Open and want to win at Augusta and all that. So obviously I haven't done that, but I've achieved some good things, and I've loved it. And I think when you do start out, you have no idea what you're capable of. So to to set goals out like when you're 15, 16, it's all very good. But I mean, at that stage, you have no idea whether you are good enough to play on tour at all, or if you're good enough at winning majors. So you sort of have to take it one day at a time as well.
Soren, looking back on it all now, what has been the standout moment, the highlight for you?
There are a lot of them, but I think because golf is such an individual sport, winning the World Cup with Torbjørn Olesen down in Australia there was definitely one of the highlights. It's amazing to be able to, you know, to celebrate with a guy that's been right next to you for 72 holes and watched him play and that. So, but apart from that one, I would say probably winning the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open in 2015. I'd been struggling a little bit for a few years there, and then to come through on like a big tournament there on a great golf course was one of the highlights as well, for sure.
Soren, what's the biggest change, having been there for so many tournaments, what's the biggest change that you've seen in the game?
Well, the biggest change is all my competitors could be my kids.
and bigger than you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So, a lot of things have changed, obviously, but, you know, a lot of people, I think, too much talk about how the game has changed and how distance has ruined the game and all that. I don't see that. I still see the old great game that can be played in many different ways. And to only look at distance and say that the game is ruined is crazy. It's still a wonderful game, and it can be played by anybody.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, and I think you're very accurate in your comments. What sort of advice would you give to younger players, either coming up through on tour or hoping to start a career like you've had?
Well, I think the most important thing is to find your own way. I don't hit it very far. I've never hit it very far, but. You know, I develop, you know, good short game, good wedge game, so I can still birdie some of the par fives. But the end of the day, you got to find your own way. You know, some guys like to be taught a lot, and some guys sort of find it themselves. You know, you've got the Montgomerys that hardly got any lessons, and you've got players like Justin Rose and guys that have coaches there all the time. It's like, you know, there's no formula that fits all. So you got to find your own way, and as long as you're very passionate about it and can't stay away from the game, you've got every chance.
You made the cut last week. What are your goals now for the rest of 2020 and beyond that as well?
I need to improve my driving. My driving hasn't been very good. Like I said, I mean, I don't hit the ball very far, but I don't hit it very straight either. So, that's a big... No, but I think the rest of my game is still very, very good, but my driving's not very good. So I need to improve my driving, and if I do, I think I still believe I can win a tournament on tour.
So 600 tournaments ago, Soren, did you ever think that you would be able to play 8 regular European Tour events for a first prize of $1 million?
No, of course not. It's incredible how the game have grown like that. And I suppose with me being 44, I'm very fortunate to have the same age as Tiger. I think that's about where the comparison ends.
Some tournaments, Soren, we have music accompanying players as they get to the first tee. What is the go-to Soren Kjeldsen track that we could look forward to hearing as you approach the tee box?
I don't know about that. The music they're playing, I don't even know. You know, I'm too old for that music.
But mate, you might be old enough, but at least yours has got a bit of a melody to it.
Yeah, that's right. No, I mean, I'm always, and people are surprised about this, I've always been into rap music. So I would put something on there that, you know, a bit of gangster rap in there.
Look at you. Look at you. Down with the kids. Look at you. So, Soren,
exactly.
You've played 600. Is it possible you could play 700?
I don't know. I hope so. You know, I still love it. I still can't wait to get out there, so who knows, but I'll give it my best.
Brilliant, Soren. Have a great week at a wonderful tournament in Dubai at the Emirates. It'll be a fantastic 4 days, no doubt about that. From all of us here and to you, many congratulations on 600 tournaments on the European Tour. And when you've done your 700th, we'll get you back on.
Excellent. That's a deal. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Soren. You
well
take
done,
care.
Soren.
Cheers, Soren. Congrats.
Cheers, guys.
I'm looking at you, Reese, after talking to and listening to Soren there, and you almost look jealous of his enthusiasm.
Yeah, impressed as much as anything. Yeah, yeah, it's. I always think it's hard. Doesn't matter what you do, it's hard to keep up the level of excitement of endeavor throughout anything you do in life.
Sure.
For 20. How? What do you say? 23 years or something? 600 tournaments.
I know, but people think you played 600 tournaments. You're traveling the world. Life's great. Top hotels, steak every night, all that kind of stuff, and it's great. But within those 600 tournaments, there's a lot of heartache and a lot of low moments. A lot of stuff that it's not all a big high, and you're just having a wonderful time for 600 events. It doesn't work like that. And yet, beyond all that, and the scar tissue and the pain, there come the high moments and the good moments, and that's where Søren exists. That's where he lives. It's a brilliant thing to be able to do.
Absolutely, and you got to remember spending time away from family. That can be challenging. Anybody who travels with work will relate to that. And yeah, there's good moments, but I think also with golf, unfortunately you tend to lose more than you win. It's just the nature of the beast.
Even Jack Nicklaus says that.
Yeah,
right, yeah,
you lose all the time, and then you win, hopefully, on occasions.
Sure,
and. So, yeah, to be able to withstand all of that, if you like, disappointment throughout the periods is highly impressive and shows a great level of character.
How about you, Kit? How do you keep your enthusiasm going for being a journalist?
Well, I'm a golf journalist and I love the game. I love talking about it. And that's where I think Kjeldsen gets his motivation from. You can tell when he talks about it, just his voice lifts. If you're in person with him, his face kind of lights up. He still loves the game.
He does,
loves
yeah.
being in and amongst it. And I think as long as you love what you're doing, whatever that may be, you can keep that determination, that hunger, that desire, and it adds to your life if you're doing something that you love. And for Søren playing and still playing on the European Tour, and for me talking and writing rubbish about golf, that love is still there.
People rushing to see your next article after that sell, no doubt about that. Okay, something brand new on the European Tour, the European E-Tour. When you see the word I, you think it's going to be something, a tablet or a phone. When you see the word E, you're into something that is a virtual game. This is virtual golf. So 45,000 people entered from 169 countries, which is unbelievable. And Peyton Gordley defeated countryman Joshua Smith to win the trophy and $5,000 in the first event of the inaugural European E-Tour Series. So they play online, they whittle them down, and a bunch of players go to Abu Dhabi, and then they do it. They had a special rig all there just for this. And we've got a winner, Peyton Gordley, who will go on to the grand final when we get to the curtain closer at the end of the year in Dubai. So have you played any golf?
No, I used to play
Tiger Woods
PGA Tour right. games back in the day. I think when the game that this is played on first came out, we're talking best part of a decade now, it's probably a lot different than it is now. I used to have a little dabble on it online, but nowhere near their standards. But it's a brave new world, isn't it? We've got e-games involved in the European Tour now. And it's just another example of how the European Tour's really trying to engage with a whole different audience and being innovative.
What about you, Mr. Facebook, Mr. Instagram? Bit of e-golf for you, Reese?
No, I'm afraid not, Rob. No. I'm pretty terrible at any
broadband.
Kind of...
You've got broadband down there in Wales, have you?
I think it's coming in next week, somebody said, yeah.
So talk about the 45,000 and the game being worldwide. Entrants were from Germany, Romania, Spain, United Kingdom and the United States. And they competed for a total prize of $10,000 in what was constructed in Abu Dhabi, which I would think if you're playing e-golf and you get the chance to go to Abu Dhabi to then get a chance to go to Dubai, you'd be super pumped for that.
It's an amazing opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
You're just doing it as a hobby back home. You like a bit of golf. You like playing it online. And suddenly, now you can be part of the European Tour, part of its E-Tour. Get to go to places like Abu Dhabi and Dubai. There are qualifiers in other venues alongside the European Tour events through the summer as well. It takes you into a whole new stratosphere. And when you look at what gamers in some other areas are earning, we're talking millions and millions of dollars here. If golf can kind of catch on to that bandwagon and catch up, that's a whole new stratosphere, if you like, for the game. And just one country that jumps out there, you know, Romania, you've got someone entering from a country where golf isn't established.
Sure.
If you can get people interested online in countries where they perhaps don't have the access to golf, and then that drives them to try and take up the game, then that can only be a good thing.
It's
for
not
normal
going away,
golf,
is it?
In inverted commas,
it's
as
not
well
going
as
away.
The E-Tour.
No, it's a brave new world, no doubt about it. And well done to the European Tour for embracing it. So four more championships across the globe through the season, and we will get to that grand final when we get to Dubai, the Dubai World Dubai. God, I can remember. I was going to buy
the Dubai DP World Tour Championship.
Do you know where I was going there? Dubai Duty Free.
Were you?
Yes, I was. But that's of course.
That's a bit earlier.
That's of course a little earlier in the summer. So yeah, looking forward to that. You can go to europeantour.com for more information on the EA Tour series. No doubt about it. On the PGA Tour, Andrew Landry recovered from three bogeys in a row on the back nine to win for the second time on tour, and 32 years of age. Bit of a journeyman, perhaps. I don't know. I mean, they were calling him a veteran at 32. It's not that long ago when 32 was, you're sort of into your peak. You get to 32 and they think you're in your peak years now. And they were saying veteran at 32.
Oh, to be a veteran at 32. We're all past it then. It's all over. Game over. I mean, what a win, though. But it's a funny tournament, that. Last year, was it Adam Longwon?
Adam Longwon,
he came on off of no form whatsoever. Obviously, Andrew Landry's done a similar thing. He seems to be a bit all or nothing. He was tied second in this event a couple of years ago
before
he went on to win the Valero Texas Open. He seems to kind of win or contend or miss the cut. But, hey, winning's what matters in this game. He's got two PGA Tour titles to his name.
That's right. He certainly has. And playing along at the same time, but much earlier, our time here because it was in Singapore, Matt Kuchar, three-shot win at the SMBC Singapore Open, where four players secured their places at the Open Championship. And that series continues through the year, where players playing in far-flung places have identified tournaments where if you play well, you get to tee it up at St. George's in the summer. That's a huge carrot.
Absolutely. It's a great opportunity for players around the world to play in the Open. They've changed it over the years where you had to always go to a local qualifier or travel to near the venue to get into the tournament. Whereas now the RNA have branched out and they're giving qualifying spots to some of the big tournaments around the world. And I think full credit to them. They model it on being the Open Championship where anyone can take part. And therefore, you have to embrace everybody in the world and give everyone an opportunity if they're good enough to get in.
Runner-up Justin Rose into the top 10, number 8. So he's climbing in the right direction again. So let's look ahead now to the next event on the European Tour, which stays in the desert, just down the road from Abu Dhabi, the Omega Dubai Desert Classic at the Emirates. Rhys, I bet you're a big fan of the golf course. I always thought it was fun to play.
Yeah, I agree. It is. I think you're right. It's a fun golf course. There's a lot can happen, particularly on the back nine. You've got three reachable par fives on the back nine and a drivable par four. That brings in lots of eagles, lots of birdies. There's some challenging par fours as well. But look out for some low score in it. It's very much a golf course dependent on the level of rough. If the rough is high, it makes it a little bit more tricky. But even still, the weather obviously would likely to be good and the scoring to be low. So, yeah.
Bryson DeChambeau, defending champion. He's put on some bulk over the winter, trying to hit the ball further. He's got his own way and his own mind and the way he should conduct himself on the golf course and what he's doing with his body. Well, he thinks that more muscles is going to be an advantage to him.
Well, he had a little dig at Brooks Koepka for not having a six-pack, I believe, in one of his interviews in Abu Dhabi. And Mr. Koepka hit back with pictures of his four major trophy, saying, "You're right, I'm too short." So he's already ruffling a few feathers with this
approach. I don't mind that.
I don't mind it, but he's got to back it up on the golf course. He missed the cut in Abu Dhabi. If he misses the cut again here in Dubai, and, you know, he's a defending champion coming in off of a dominant seven-shot victory last time. If you suddenly go from that to missing the cut, a year later, all these changes, when you're putting the spotlight on yourself, essentially, because he likes to get out there and he likes to be spoken about, there's going to be a few question marks if he misses a cut again in an event where he was so dominant just 12 months previous when he wasn't quite so bulky.
He was talking about hitting it 400 yards and stuff like that. And they said, you know, what about slow play? He said, well, I'm not going to have problems with that because I'm so far down the golf course. It won't be an issue for me. What about going to a tournament that's at the same course every year? How much fun is that? Because now everybody knows from watching golf at the Emirates over the years what you're going to get. It's a bit like Augusta. You get to Augusta and everybody knows the holes. You get to the Omega Dubai Desert Classic and you know the golf course. I personally love that rather than a change of venue every year. What do you say?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good for the viewer, for the golf fan as much as anything. I mean, yeah, I think occasionally the players like to change up a little bit just for a freshness, but a venue like the Emirates, just about everybody loves. So you want to go back there. You want to play. And yeah, you don't have to spend hours upon hours on practice rounds trying to figure it all out because you already know it. you can go in with a, you know, much cleaner, fresher head. You know more or less what your strategy is going to be before you show up. So you've just got to go out and execute.
What's the most memorable shot from all the years that we've watched this event at the Emirates? What's the most memorable shot that you can think of historically at this golf course?
The one that stands out to me has to be Monty's driver into 18.
Absolutely.
Off the deck.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was for me. Driver off the deck with, well, he must have been two or three decades back with the clubs that they were testing, Van Rooyen and Matt Wallace. It was one of those, driver off the deck, you know, a fade for Monty, which it was, over the water, landing on the green and keeping it on the green.
Suits him nicely, but a course that enables you to do dramatic things like that, especially coming down the stretch, is normally a good one. The thing that I was thinking of while you were talking there, Reese, about the familiarity of going back to a course. Obviously, horses for courses is a bit of a thing. Sort of in, obviously, both you guys have spent a number of years on tour. If you got a course that you liked, or conversely, you didn't like, or there just wasn't any form, how much does that affect, A, whether you're playing that tournament, and B, what your expectations are going in? Do you think this is a course I've had a great record on, boom, I just turn up, it's going to happen, or, oh God, I've missed the cut three times, I'm screwed here, I've got no chance?
I think you're right. I think if you've got success, or you've had success on a golf course, then yeah, you do feel better going to it. You obviously, the tee shot suit your eye, the various conditions. The interesting thing I always find also, though, if you're playing well at a certain venue, you go to the first tee and you remember the fairway being really wide, and then you go and play a practice round, or you start and you go, wow, these are quite narrow. It's actually more difficult than I thought. But also the other way around, you go back to a golf course where you haven't played well, but maybe your form is improving, and you remember the golf course being super narrow or trouble everywhere, but you keep slotting it down the fairway, it feels far easier. So it's funny how the mind does trick you into how you remember certain scenarios.
And I would also say, and add to that, that courses that I'd play well on, you go back and you expect a good performance, then you love the course, but you had a bad week, rubbish, and then you go to a course that you've never played well on, all of a sudden you hate the golf course, you have a great week, and you think, oh, I really like this place now. So we're so fickle.
Yeah.
Things can change, you know, the flick of a coin. It's unbelievable, it really is. Who do you think the golf course is going to suit? Do you have to be a long hitter, short hitter? Does it matter?
I think you've got to make a lot of birdies, and I think par fives have been key. Previously, DeChambeau absolutely took them apart last year. If you're going to be in contention with how low the scores are, you're going to need to do well on the par fives. Of course, that does favour the longer hitters because you can hit shorter shots in there. But there's more than one way to skin a cat. If you're absolutely razor sharp with your wedges and you hole your fair share of putts, you can do it as well. But I think as a sort of indicator, you'd probably be looking at sort of par five scoring. And
pure
general
greens
birdies.
Too.
Yeah.
Pure greens.
We saw last week, if you give yourself chances and you have that good week, like Westy did, someone who you might not have thought when a lot of putts need to be holed and it becomes a bit of a race, he might not be the top of your list, the current Westwood, and he went and was brilliant. So I think if you can hold your fair share of putts, and you're going to need birdies and eagles.
Give us a clue who's playing.
Yeah, to add to that, I actually like someone
in a minute. In a minute.
I was going to add and say that if you can move the ball a little bit right to left, I feel like it helps around
the drawer's golf course
a little bit.
All right.
Not that holes don't. There are doglegs left to right, but the ones that go right to left are sort of forced draw shots, particularly on the back nine.
Tee shot at one, tee shot at three.
Yeah. I was thinking back nine. You've definitely got 12, 13,
yes,
14,
around the corner,
16,
17. 18.
There you go. That's most of the back nine.
There's
then
a lot of back nine. Yeah. Where, like I said, there are holes that go left to right, eight, for example, but you've got no obstruction. You can hit, if you're a one-dimensional draw player, you can hit it across the corner.
Right.
Whereas
it's like 17, same thing. Yeah.
You can't hit a big fade off of 18, and really, you're going to struggle to hold that fairway with anything going left to right. So I always look to someone who can or is comfortable moving the ball right to left. And yes, definitely par fives are a big thing, but they're not that long. In the par
five modern standards,
they're very reachable. So you don't have to be a bomber, but you have to make birdies. You're at no question there.
Gordon, tell us who's playing.
Oh, who's playing?
Yeah,
this week we have Bryson DeChambeau, as we mentioned, defending champion. Tommy Fleetwood's in the field. Louis Oosthuizen, Shane Lowry is. Bernd Wiesberger, who was featuring well last week, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Henrik Stenson, who's a regular, it seems, at this tournament. Danny Willett, former winner. Matt Wallace. Shugo Imara. Ches Reavy over from the States. And this is a name.
Good luck with this one.
Well, this player, Jazz Jowatanand. He's a very exciting Thai player. Had a lot of success in the last 12 months, predominantly on the Asian Tour.
He was up there last week.
He was up there last week. And he's also featured, I believe...
In Singapore, by the way.
Yeah, in Singapore. And he featured at the PGA Championship.
Finished 14th in the 14th end, but had a really good run going.
I remember following him there. I thought he looks a good player. And I'd watch for him this week as a possibility. RCB, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, he's another former winner at the venue. Victor Perez, you know, his career is only going in one direction. Ian Poulter's playing, and Erik van Rooyen.
Yeah, very good field on a very good golf course. Fantasy Race to Dubai predictions. The format is you get two picks. That's for us in the studio here. One from the field and one from outside last year's top 50 in the Race to Dubai, which sometimes can be, a name sticks out like you can't believe, and sometimes it's very difficult. So let's find out what this week's experts have come up with. We'll start with you, Kit.
Oh, I get the honour, that's all right. Do you want both picks, or are we going to do reverse order?
Well, I think you get one pick and then we go back around again.
That sounds fair. Okay, first dibs, I've got to go with Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, he's just picked up where he left off at the back end of last year, won the Ned Bank, runner-up at the DP World Tour Championship, another second place last week in Abu Dhabi. Tied 6th and tied 16th here the last 2 years. He's going to win a lot this year, and it's all going to start.
He's going to win
week.
A lot this year.
He will win at least 3 times this year.
That's a huge call.
And there's every chance one of them will be a major.
That's a huge...
I think he's on for a massive year. I really do. And I think, you know, he's coming into his prime years. He's got enough experience behind him, but he's
definitely
still young.
All the things you're saying are right.
Yeah, I think he's poised for a massive year, and that could well all start right here at the Emirates.
Excellent stuff, Rhys.
Inside top 50, I'm going to go Louis Oosthuizen. I think his form is strong. I think he's comfortable moving the ball around this golf course. I fancy him to do well this week.
I can't let him off for laying up. I'll still go back.
You're every still time. Bitter about
every
that.
Every time I think of Louis and I think, what were you doing? I flash back to that final fairway at the HSBC in Shanghai, and he's in the fairway. He's on a downslope. We've got about 220 at the front. Needs an eagle to tie, and he lays up. Goes wedge, wedge.
I don't think I remember the last time I saw a camera cut to Louis Oosthuizen on a green, and he wasn't between like 18 and 30 feet for birdie. He just lives there. Just lives between 18 and 30 feet. If that putter gets hot, it's all over.
He's a beautiful golfer.
He is so stylish. Yeah.
Oh, he's a fantastic golfer.
Very envious.
But he laid up from the fairway when he needed. The situation was clear. And he was third and had a two-shot buffer back to fourth. I can't get past that.
I don't think he's looking that way, or surely he's not looking that way.
Well, why lay up? Why wouldn't you? If it was a 1-in-10 shot. You dump it in the water, drop out, wedge on 2, putt 6, you still finish third.
You watch him.
You've got a free go.
Yeah.
It's a free go from the fairway.
He could be faced with the same situation this week with that finishing hole.
You know, that's that. If you need a birdie to tie or a birdie to win, then you've got to go for it. I mean, that's such a great finishing hole.
Yeah, it is a good one. It's especially if you get it in the fairway, but... We've seen all sorts of numbers over the years down that hole. Just because it's a reachable par 5 doesn't guarantee you a birdie or an eagle chance. We've seen lots of 6s and 7s and tournaments lost as much as tournaments won.
Yeah, that's true. So you've gone strong, you two. And I'm going to go for back-to-back wins in the desert with Lee Westwood.
Oh, this is like the Rob Lee, Lee Westwood loving today.
And the major. I'm going back-to-back wins for Lee Westwood. I think the hangover was... I think he's back on dry January now. He's just had the one... And have a night off. You can have Sunday.
Absolutely.
Sunday, even in Lent. Sunday, you can... If you're... Whatever you're skipping in Lent, Sunday, you get a day off.
So you've just given Kit hard time for Fleetwood 3-win season.
That's right.
And you've gone...
To be fair, I think he agreed.
Yeah.
I'm a big Tommy fan. And I think the sky's the limit for him. So yeah, absolutely. But I can't sit here and say he'll win three times. I can't say that. But
no.
Can he win a major? Absolutely. Can Lee Westwood win a major? Absolutely. Can he win this week in Dubai? Absolutely.
I mean, to be fair, if he wins this week in Dubai, goes on to win the major as you're predicting, he's making a charge for world number one again.
He's moving in the right. He'll be making huge strides, and the Ryder Cup place is
definitely being the Ryder
cemented. Cup. Yeah, fun though, fun to watch. So we got our first three picks, and now someone from outside last year's top 50.
Go on, Rob. We'll go in reverse to make it fair. You get first dibs on the outside top 50s.
Yeah. I mean, Xander Lombard, I picked in South Africa, and he missed the cut by a shot. Justin Harding missed the cut by a shot. Xander had a reasonable week last week. He was up there for a little while. But I'm not going to pick Xander Lombard. I'm going to pick Jazz Jane Wotelinond.
I knew I shouldn't have done the reverse thing.
What? That was yours.
He was my pick as well. Yeah.
No, so I'm having Jazz, which is a fantastic name if you're if you're in Scrabble. I mean, you've got a J 10 points,
the
a two Z 10 points.
Is the board big enough to get it on the
Jazz
Scrabble?
Jazz Jane Wotelinond is my second pick. So I throw it across to one of you two. Whoever wants to go next.
Reese could absolutely stitch me up.
Oh,
I've got two options written down, and if Reese goes for the second one, I thought two will be enough. No one will pick the second. I could be.
In my turn?
Yeah. Go
yes, it is.
I'm going Sam Horsfield. I think he's promising. Obviously, a promising young player. Had a little bit of a wobble last year throughout the middle latter stages, but I seems to have recovered well. Finished tied 12th just this past week. I think it's the style of golf course that could suit him. He'll be aggressive. I'm going to go with Sam.
Good show.
Sean Norris for me. Mentioned him a little bit earlier. Fantastic end of the year.
But an amazing third round loss. Consider the golf he played for three of the 4 days. The third round, I think 77, the third round.
It happens sometimes. We all have bad days. So that's you can kind of almost discard that a little bit and then be, well, it was an even better week than actually it showed up because there was that one bad one. The good was very good. Great in Japan at the end of last year. Tied, coming off the tied sixth. Did play in Dubai last year. Obviously, without the momentum he's now got, made the cut, didn't make any noise. Hopefully, with a bit more momentum and confidence this year, he can do the business.
And we're pretty sure it's going to be a low-scoring week.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think it could be. It's often 20 plus.
Yeah, I think you need to get to 20.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Of course, that's about it for now. Join us next week because we will look back at what happens in Dubai at the Amiga Dubai Desert Classic. And then we're staying in the desert and looking ahead to the Saudi International, powered by SoftBank Investment Advisors. They said ad lib this end, but how can you remember that? That's absolutely impossible. You can get in touch with us on the European Tour via the official website and the app, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as well. But from Reese Davis, who have you gone for? Who's your tips this week?
Oh, my tips this week. Sorry, I've gone for Louis Oosthuizen and Sam Horsfield.
And reading them off a piece of paper because he would not have remembered those two. And yourself, Kit?
Tommy Fleetwood and Sean Norris.
And I've gone for Lee Westwood, back-to-back wins, back on dry January. Go on, Lee, get in there. And Jazz Jane Wotelinond. From the three of us until next week, it's goodbye.